Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. Today we're going to dive into a cookware store and how to make this business work online. So let's get started. Hello Ian, how are you?
Hey Mark, good to hear your voice. I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. Right, today we're going to do a spotlight on an industry, and we're going to go into cookware, because cookware is one of the big markets out there, and obviously traditionally it's been sold in bricks and mortar, and now it's been moving a lot more online. So what would you think about the cookware industry, Ian?
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, the first thing, I think you're right. Where's it going? It's an industry, and what we saw over the last 10 years is it's moving from what you'd have a shop on the high street, and there's obviously still some shops on the high street that unfortunately a lot of them are shut down, and it's moved online, and there are some left, but it's interesting to see the ones that are left, and why they're still there and why they're doing. Certain cookware companies are doing really well online and really well offline. So other ones have gone out of business, and that's quite interesting. So I think we'll come on to some of those examples a bit later on.
Yeah. Well, I think the model has changed, hasn't it? You know, you would basically create a good product, you'd do some branding around it, maybe a TV advert, and you'd get it in a physical retail store like Harrods or something like that, and you'd be pretty much done. That'd be it.
Yeah.
And now
what used to happen?
Different.
I mean, the businesses that have shut down are the ones that were selling other people's products in the store without any reason to buy from them. And of course, and then they tried to transfer that model online, and that just hasn't worked, because they were trying to replicate the fact they had a store on an expensive street in London somewhere. And, you know, they then tried to put that model online. So they're basically selling other people's products for more expensive than everywhere else. And
yeah,
that obviously doesn't work, does it?
I remember a chap came into you for a meeting, ran a nationwide cookware brand, and obviously his experience was in retail, bricks and mortar, and we said to him, it's about price, it's now about price. And he says, oh Ian, it can't be just about price now.
Because I'm clarity, sorry, he was selling other people's products. They didn't have any own branded products.
And so he was selling other people's products, and he was used to people, walking into his shop in Chester or wherever and going, oh, I'm here now. I need something. I need to go and buy that expensive coffee maker, and then buying it because it was easy. But what had happened is obviously people now were price conscious. They could quickly go and look up the price. They could look at it in the store and they could go and buy it somewhere else. So it took about 3 years after that conversation for his business to go bankrupt.
He said at the time, it's got to be something other than price. It's got to be something other than price. And we said, well, unfortunately, when you're selling other people's products online, price and availability are some of the biggest driving factors. It doesn't, it obviously there are other things you can do. But if you are fundamentally more expensive, if you're £50 more expensive than everybody else, and your delivery is 3 to 5 days, you're going to lose. It doesn't matter how amazing your customer service is. It's not going to work. But that is not unique to selling cookware online. That is any business. Fundamentally, the first thing you have to think about online is, are you selling other people's products or is it your own brand? And that's a massive. That's a huge one, because the strategy then is completely different. If you sell your own brand.
We've done that podcast on it.
Well, so, I was going to tell you what it was. I won't stop. Fine, go on to the podcast.
Well, basically,
What we now is going to say is what do we do now? So basically, a lot of people, you know, they either if they're selling other people's products, you've got to realize that you've got to be price competitive. There's no real way around that, unless there's something else you're buying with it. Maybe you can bundle it together and put it into something, make it something different that you can't get from somebody else. And it's difficult to understand exactly, you know, the individual prices of things, different stuff like that.
But also, you can't differentiate on price, really, because most of the time it's being set by the brand itself. Mm. They're saying you can only sell this product at this price. And if you try and discount it, you know, you'll get thrown off their list. You know, you won't be able to supply. So you have to be clever with it, and you have to try to create a bundle or a kit. You know, so they say, hey, you can buy this pot, you know, this big saucepan, and, you know, you have to be able to, you know, you have to be able to sell something else with it that's free. Mm-hmm. Or you do warranty, and, you know, so businesses like Lakeland. Look at
the extreme example, in America, where they sell Argo cookers. You know, everybody's got to sell them for the same price, but this is what they're throwing in, like, whole fridges and fridge freezers and things with them. It's the package.
And look at people like Lakeland. Lakeland sell other people's brands as well as their own, but you know they did well with their warranty. So they basically sold, you know, all the coffee machines and you know food mixers and you know for Nespresso and Magimix and all these great brands. And they offered a 3-year warranty, and everyone else offered a 2-year warranty. So who are you going to buy it from? So it was fundamentally about that. Why should I buy from you? And if you're selling other people's products, remember the desirability for that product is already there. You've got to convince them to buy it from you. And that's the question you absolutely have to answer. And unless you can answer that question, you're not going to scale online. This is if you're selling other people's brands. And I say this in cookware because there are lots of people selling other people's cookware online. So you've fundamentally got to answer that. But that to one side, you know, if you look at generally cookware, it's the same KPIs and the same method and formula that we talk about. So let's just go through some of our framework and apply it to selling cookware online.
Yeah.
So I've got a few things here that I've jotted down. So let's just talk about you know, add to basket, basket checkout, checkout to order, average order value, key anxieties, reason to buy, three-legged stool. I've just written out, I've written down everything. This is everything that I've just jotted down in my head. So, you know, ultimately, when you're selling cookware online, you've still got to think about the fundamental maths of selling online, which is conversion rate, traffic, average order value. And, you know, you've got to think about the add to basket. So it's linked to the average order value, isn't it? I mean, the higher the average order value, the add to basket stat is often less because it's more of a considered purchase. So you've got to monitor that, you know, but we would say with cookware, it would fall into, I mean, it depends on if you've got repeat business coming through, but cookware generally, depending on how popular your brand is, you should be looking for a conversion rate, I would say, of about 3%. Something like that, you know, depending if you are your own brand, you know, an add to basket stat, maybe something like 8.5%, a basket to checkout of about 45-50%, and a checkout to order of about 80%. That's probably about where you should be. And then if you take that now, let's just break that down a little bit. I think let's just talk about the three-legged stool. Our three-legged stool a little bit here. And stop me at any time, Mark.
Let me put something into that, because when I've been a media buyer for cookware for quite a long time, people selling their own brand cookware. And what you tend to find with cookware is it's very difficult. So it's like Ian's cookware saucepan. Right, that'll convert very well on Google AdWords, but if Ian's brand of cookware went after the term saucepan, then it'd be very difficult for him to convert. So it's very difficult to go out and go after generic terms on Google AdWords and things like that. So this is kind of all around the add to basket, right? So in order to do that, it's clear that you need to get more people who know about Ian's saucepans and why they want to buy it. So you really have to build that brand and build that brand story so people more come into it. So it's very difficult just to rock up, Ian, to create a saucepan. It might be the best saucepan in the world, but people don't know about it when at the time of purchase, and so they're not gonna come into it. So therefore, there's a real shift in terms of how these brands are marketed now, in that they used to put them in shops, and because they were in that shop and people were pushing them and people were in, like the saleswoman was in the shop, and they go, well, actually, Ian's saucepan's actually won these awards and it's going to be the best one for this one. I know it's a little bit more expensive, but you're not going to regret this because it's going to last a little bit longer. That salesman now is gone, and the brands have to do that themselves. And that's a big shift for them, because then they suddenly have to create a lot more content. They have to create a lot more communities around their products. But that's what people are doing. Well, so that in order to get the ad to basket up, you have to realize that you have to increase the amount of people that are going to be Googling Ian's saucepan.
Well, because I think with cookware, there's always an alternative. You can always make do with that old pan or that old spoon or that old toaster. Mm. Literally you can go outside and start cooking in your, in a fire pit in the garden. You've got to show them all the amazing things that you can do with this new cookware, and how simpler or faster or easier or better tasting or healthier it's going to be with this new method, and that is the key, isn't it? What they were doing in store, and that's what you have to replicate, that experience. Because if you don't, all you've done is plonked a product on a page and it looks like a baking tray. And you have to really bring it alive with showing, and not just the job to be done, but the job to be done's job, which is to make your whole family around the dinner table on the Sunday, for the Sunday roast, have an amazing experience. Yeah. Go, wow, I can't believe, how do you get those roast potatoes that good? That's amazing.
The good thing about cookware is the job to be done is something that people are passionate about, and there's some people that people are going to continue to want to do over and over and over. It's not like moving house. They're going to continue to want to cook good food for their families. Mm. So you can very easily create like a Facebook group, a community around the product, around something. And if you can actually get that around something trending, you can do really, really well. So a good example is like what the Instapot did. So the Instapot is one of these kind of standalone pressure cookers, electric, and people would have recipes, and it became like an internet community of people that kind of had its own life, really, and that was just grown from nowhere, and none of the big manufacturers really kind of knew what was happening. And obviously then Philips came out with the one, and other people came out with them as a kind of Me Too product, but it was the community around it. People wanted to have that product because they wanted to be part of the community, and they wanted to be trying what other people were doing.
Can I just say, because I think the three-legged stool needs to be talked about here, just to give some grounding and context to what you're saying, because what you're saying is great and it's right, but it's general fluffy stuff, isn't it? You've got to figure out where it's not suitable for everybody. You've got to figure out where what you're saying fits into something very structured, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the three-legged stool. And the three-legged stool is quite relevant to cookware. So essentially, we're saying you have So it's generally the three main methods, and you can have a mixture of all of them, but it's the three main methods to actually scale an e-commerce business. It's kind of like the fundamental backbone. Whether or not three-legged stool is quite the right term, maybe we'll change that, because the three-legged stool denotes that you need all three at the same time.
you need a bit of it, don't you?
You have one. It's essentially a lopsided three-legged stool. Maybe we should think of a better acronym. Nobody was quite good at acronyms. Anyway,
just say you need one of these three things.
Yeah. So you either go down the branded route, which is a big, big brand. The second one is you either go down the offer architecture route, and the third one is you have a product that solves a unique problem. They're the big three major ways of scaling an e-commerce business. So let's just take each one at turn. So something like the first one, a brand, And because I think the Instapot has a mixture of a product that solves a unique problem and a brand community. But the first one, so brand generally, would be something like something that, you know, a cookware item that really doesn't do anything unique. It doesn't necessarily have an offer architecture. It has the brand, which allows it to get away with it. And that would be something like Smeg. So Smeg fridges. I mean, obviously, quite a long time ago now, but Smeg fridges had a had an iconic brand, and that people wanted to buy into that because it was a it signified, you know, better a lifestyle element, didn't it? An emotional thing, and they were able to charge a premium because of that brand, because it had that look that everybody wanted. And I think the modern day example is probably somebody like Arga. You know, Arga products are great, and they're really changing their products to make them much more, you know, interesting to the modern day person. But generally, they've got a fantastic brand, and they've created a community around that brand. And you identify yourself, you know, as an Arga. It's a massive lifestyle statement piece, isn't it? You know, people identify themselves as an Arga customer, and so that's an example of that. But obviously, that's very hard to do off the bat. There's lots of examples where celebrities have lended themselves to cookware. And that's really just an extension. That is, you know, going down that branding route, which of course you can do with social and Instagram and all those sort of things. But it's not something you can click your fingers and start straight away. So,
which is why doing a community for can build a brand. But basically, it's just going to add to brand. If you are building a brand, obviously the money you put in to build a brand needs to be less than the money you're getting out in terms of profit. And a good way to do that is actually to build a community around your product to do the job to be done. Because people come into a market to get a job to be done. They don't come into a market to buy a saucepan. They come into a market to get a job to be done. And the job to be done might be, I've got a new kitchen done and I want everything to work together and be done right. Well, and I actually want to be able to cook better meals.
And so, you think about how, it's a very good point. Because what the job to be done, let's take a cheesy example. I want amazing roast potatoes. What they're going to do is go online looking for ways of getting the amazing roast potatoes. They're not going to go online searching for a saucepan. You know, they're going to go online. They're going to research how to do that. They'll get involved in a community on Instagram or, you know, Facebook or, you know, YouTube. And in it will be a brand that will be talking about how you use their particular type of saucepan or pan to create the most amazing roast potatoes. And that's the general. That's a very crude example, but that's how it goes.
But the example would be like let's say there's some kind of diet trend or something like a paleo trend or something like that comes out, and you create a community on that, and then you're creating products that would suit creating those recipes. So, you know, certain, you know, maybe the raw food one might have dehydrators, and then they would have, you know, a community around that. So, well, here's everybody using our dehydrator, and here's how we, you know, here's our tray to, you know, store it, and here's, you know, all the things you would need to do in order to kind of create that lifestyle for you. And this is the cookware community we're creating around it. So, if the job to be done is big enough, and there's a kind of community you can build around it, then obviously, if you own that community, you can then sell your products to it. So, like the roast dinner you were talking about, you know, that could be, you could actually create a community around Sunday roast dinners, like create the UK's competition in the community to create the, you know, the best looking roast dinner of 2021. And everybody goes in there and starts posting the pictures.
I think the three-legged stool, the first and the third, so the brand and the product that solves a unique problem, actually go quite well hand in hand, don't they? You know, whereas more, you know, in other industries, it's more clear cut. It's either brand, offer architecture, or product that solves a unique problem. I think certainly with like Arga, for example, you know, that you know, it's brand, but it also has a product that does have unique problem solving properties. And lots of cookware. I mean, obviously, at the top end, there'll be very, very top end brands in cookware that will charge a huge premium just for that brand.
Well, they'll always sell because, you know, Marco Pierre White uses this, and you know, like those top brands will be used by those top people, and then by association, they'll go, well, I actually want that because he uses it.
But again, it's the same in any industry. It's hard to get there. You know, you can't think I'm gonna, you know, I'm doing £1 million online or half a million. I'm gonna go down that arc. I'm gonna go down that avenue because you can't. It takes a lot of time to think carefully about it, and so.
Whereas you can create your own community. Yeah, but
you can create your own community, and I think I think you tap into that, wouldn't you? You create community around how you can use your products to go and do something in the in the kitchen that's amazing, and you can tap into that. And the second one is the offer architecture route, whereby you know it can be your own brand, which is fine. And there's businesses here that have purely realized that, okay, we have decent product, but we don't have anything that's amazingly unique. We don't have an amazing brand. But what we've done very well is go down the offer architecture. An example of the business like that is ProCook. And I think, you know, interestingly, they were a business that bought out quite a lot of cookware brands that went out of business. And why did ProCook work? Because they very simply understood that people want a bargain and they need a reason to buy. And so when you go into a ProCook store and you go and look online, the website is not beautiful to look at. And you go into a store and the stores are not beautiful to look at. But what they've done very, very well is that you go to the site and there's always a reason to buy now. And they have the three tiered of offer architecture, which they have RRP price, normal price, your price today. And that's what you do when you go in line, and when you go into a store on the high street. That's exactly, you walk into a ProCook store and you see the same thing. You go and see, you know, a set of chef's knives, you know, it'll say, you know, RRP price £120, normal price 80, today's price 59.
They're not selling other people's products, are they?
They're not selling other people's products. So they've got
They have complete control over the price.
And that is really the biggest lever you can pull. If it's your own brand and you don't have, you know, you're not selling to other people. So you don't have other stockists, you have complete freedom, you know, to control the market. That is the biggest lever. You can price it whatever you want, and you can then do it, you know, an offer architect. And that's what ProCook are doing. And that's why ProCook are surviving on the high street and they're surviving online. That's why they're growing, purely because of that.
And that's actually a lot easier business model doing it, the offer architecture, if you can just do that and be that kind of model than the community, because it's obviously something you can just kind of roll out straight away. But, you know, it's horses for courses. It depends which kind of brand you want to be. Like, not everybody wants to be a pro cook. Now, interestingly, in New Zealand, that model is being used by a company called Briscoe's. Briscoe's is the biggest kind of homeware shop, and they sell other people's brand. And all they do, their whole model, and everybody knows it, is they price things up, and then every other once a month or like ish, they have a sale where they go 65% off. Everybody knows that they price up to price down, and yet every time they have a sale, people queue over and over and over. And it's
how
insane.
Big are they? What's the turnover?
They're massive. Roughly. They're basically like
what,
you know, like
$100 million.
50? I don't know exactly, but big. Let's say that, you know, like in New Zealand, in the UK, you've got B&Qs everywhere, you know, on the industrial parks. Mm. There's always a Briscoe's on the industrial parks. So there's always a Briscoe's everywhere in New Zealand in every city. So they're like that. They're like that. And that's their model. And they're a very good company. And I've invested in their stocks and shares because they've been doing very well.
Well, so, they've got a scalable thing there, haven't they? And it's.
They just have a model.
Okay,
they just know the model.
Put it this way. If you and I, Mark, were to start a cookware brand tomorrow, that's what we would do, wouldn't we? We would go down the ProCook model route, wouldn't we? That's what we would do. Without a shadow of a doubt, and we would be able to scale it quickly to 5 million, wouldn't we? And beyond.
I would, that's what we do, because, you know, to be honest, we wouldn't have the time to go and create the community and do all that kind of stuff and do the stuff. We basically go, right, let's see if we can create this model. We've seen it work all over the world. Why don't we just replicate it here? And that's what we would do. But
I mean, having said that, you know, even if you go down that offer architecture route, or you have a product that solves a unique problem, or you go down the branding route, you still have to go through the same process where you've got to uncover the key anxieties, haven't you?
Yeah, and I think also it's so basically, you know, when you're doing that kind of pricing up to price down, you still have to create value to price down from. So yes, let's say you were selling like menswear and it looked awful. You know, if you said it was like £200 down to £100 for a pair of trousers, you're not going to buy it. So you still have to go out there and create the content and create the good imagery and create a brand story.
The desirability has to be there. If not, or actually, of course, we say convincibility. And I think actually in cookware, it's all about convincibility because it tends to be a problem-solving, rational purchase rather than an emotional lifestyle one. Or there are obviously elements of that lifestyle. So therefore, you've got to create the convincibility that that is going to do what they want.
You have to. It has to be believable that the before price might be actually something that people would actually pay. So you know, you couldn't if people go whatever, no one would ever pay £400 for that. You know what I mean? It has to be believable. And to be able to do that, you have to create the product imagery that shows that is a quality product, that it's, you know, it's bought by the
trust
right demographic.
And all the credibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the job to be done and going through the key anxieties, all those sort of things. And basically, you do all the steps that we go through, you know, uncover the job, you know, position the job to be done. Product can't be a dead end page. Go through the checklists. Squash the key anxieties and then give them a reason to buy now.
So Ian, what would you consider to be the biggest anxiety for someone, say, buying a saucepan?
Well, we use the technique that we use all the time. So if you want to find out what the biggest anxiety is and the biggest, you know, things that people love, go and look at the competitor reviews of your products. Probably the easiest place to go, and look on Amazon and obviously look at the competitor reviews as well, and people like Trustpilot and FIFO and things like that, and look at what people moan about. So what do people dislike in the reviews? Mm-hmm. And then categorize them. And it's the same for anything. It doesn't need to just be saucepans. It can be anything. And then if you look at the negative reviews, categorize them in terms of why they're negative. So if people are complaining about things like... it doesn't go in the dishwasher, or you know, it's really, really heavy, and I can't use it. You know, that's what people dislike. That's what they're going to moan about, and that's what you need to, you know, conquer that anxiety. Saying, it goes in the dishwasher straight away. You can wash it. It's amazing. It's got a special thing, and actually, it's really not heavy because you know my grandmother can use it. And then similarly, if you want to uncover what people really, really love about saucepans, you look at what people are raving about. So, you know, take away the delivery stuff. Oh, it's, you know, fast delivery. It's about, oh, I loved it because I can put it in the I can put it in the dishwasher, and I can put it in the microwave, and I can put it in the oven, and it cooks everything. So what people hate about saucepans is what they moan about, and they're your anxieties. Mm. And what people love about saucepans is what they rave about, the 5-star reviews. And there's your desirability. And that's simple as that. And you can apply that method to any online business, can't you?
Mm. And then you basically got to, you have to basically then communicate those anxieties in a very simple way. So find the key anxiety for cookware. So say it's kind of dishwasher safe. You know? And then you've got to basically, you can create little badges for different products to say dishwasher safe. Or let's say the anxiety is very much geared around one anxiety. What you can do is you could even create a guarantee around that key anxiety. So let's say the anxiety around pressure cooker is that they blow up. You could have a guarantee that it wouldn't blow up, but you wouldn't. That was just joking. But you know what I mean? That you can have a guarantee around the main anxiety to say, look, if this breaks within 5 years, we'll replace it for free or something like that. You know,
no,
that's if that
or
people are worried about
lifetime. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lifetime. Yeah.
You know,
I think the other thing is once you've solved those things, you know, that we've just said, you've figured out the key anxieties, you've figured out why people love the product. You know, you've figured out what to make people buy now. You think you've got to think about average order value and lifetime customer value too. Average order value, because people come to particularly solve a particular problem. So they're coming onto cookware to buy a set of knives or a pressure cooker or a new nonstick pan. That's the thing that they want. And the job then is to try to get them to buy other things. So you have to, like you would do in the store on the high street, because you could lay things out and merchandise the store. So when they're going over to buy the saucepan or the knives, there's other things around it, you know, and there's mixed and match and 3 for 2. And people often buy this with that. And, you know, you can then really look at selling them, you know, the knife sharpener kit or the special something that protects the nonstick pan or the special spatula that goes with the nonstick pan. Or this is part of our Sunday roast kit. And if you buy this pan with this tray, you get this free. So you really got to think about the average order value, because otherwise they'll just come in and buy that one thing and they never come back.
The lifetime customer value of cookware is also impacted by how quickly you get them actually using it and enjoying it. So, you know, think about, let's say someone buys something from your range of the roast dinner range, and it's like a roasting tin and it's, you know, basting something or something like that, you know, then you add them to your, you know, your Sunday roast Facebook group, and they get into that, and then suddenly they see everybody else who's creating the roasts, and they see you doing your recipe, you know, your recipe videos for the month. They're going to want to do the same with their new thing, because they've got, you know, they bought something that they want to be taking part in, and they go, oh, I want to do that. I want to take a photo of my thing. And then when they do that, of course, they're going to go, oh, I haven't got that little turkey baster that everybody's using, or I haven't got that knife that people are using to do the vegetables, and maybe I'll buy to do that so I can actually do that effect. You know, it's bringing people into a job.
I think they become a brand ambassador, particularly with cookware, because it's really, actually, after you've bought it, you might be buying it initially on a problem-solving, rational-based convincibility angle, but ultimately then it becomes a lifestyle choice, doesn't it? You go, oh, I only buy, you know, XYZ brand for my pans. And you start to change your kitchen around. You know, you start to buy other things.
And when we buy something,
you become really brand loyal. I mean, look at some of our staff. We've got one head of client management, COO. She loves Le Creuset, and she just like is absolutely passionate about it, and it's part of her identity.
Yeah,
you know, she's,
and they buy into,
she's
it.
Become tribal.
Becomes, because when you first walk into a cook store, you don't know the brands. Someone gets it. When you buy something, you actually want to celebrate the fact that you've bought something. It's exciting. You're getting it home. You want to be part of something. You don't just want, I mean, the unboxing experience shouldn't be the highlight of it. You know, it should be, it's like, I've got something now. What can I do with this? And especially with cookware, it's like, you know, you might buy it for one thing, but then you think, oh, I could do this and I could do that and that. And you start getting people thinking, and then it becomes a thing, and they become part of a community, and they want to take part in it. So with cookware, you've got to cultivate your audience. And I think over in the past, that was kind of done organically, you know, through people reading about you in, you know, the mainstream magazines or the newspapers or the adverts on television. But now you've got much better control and much better tools to actually really curate your own community and really build it and do a lot more with it. And so people understand what it's like to be a buyer of this, and then they'll just keep buying your stuff, because they'll go, I identify with that. I don't identify with that. I've got no idea what that is. And if I take photos and I've used something else, I don't want to be seen as somebody who's not using the right stuff. I want to be part of this group, because, you know, people want to belong. It's one of the hugest human desires, just to be part of a group that accepts them. So, you know, and cooking and food and eating is a massive part of that. So it's one of the biggest communities that you can probably build, aside of like sports and hobbies and things like that. So, that's where you're going to do it. Yeah.
Well, that's good. I think we summarized it pretty well. Is there anything else that we were mentioning, want to talk about?
Well, no, I think overall it's the same as everything else, in that, you know, you work out what you can do, how much it's going to cost you to recruit customers, and then what your lifetime customer value is. Make sure that you're making a profit when it comes in out, and then see if you're not, and then you work out where the gaps are. You look at the lowest hanging fruit in terms of your KPIs. So maybe your basket order's a bit low, or your add to basket's low. You then go, right, what's the offer architecture that I can put into this place to make sure that that is going to work better? What's the anxiety? What split tests can I do to push that up? And then you get the machine running, and then you put your communities around it, and you build that business. And that's, you know, we're doing it for quite a few cookware brands, and mostly in the UK at the moment. And that's what they're doing, and they're growing.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Ian. Have a good evening, and I'll speak to you soon.
Cheers. Bye.